parts of metropolitan New York City. I am the hip and this is a lip.
I'm sorry, what? Hello? Hello, Mr. Hip? Oh, I'm sorry. I did hear you there, I guess. You were introducing me. Yes. Hello, good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon, whenever you may be listening. Yes, this is Hip and the Lip. Hello, it is the first day of spring. Yes, spring. Everybody, the flowers are blooming, and the birds are chirping, and all that crap. And we can now move to the Sweet 16 of March Madness, NHL NBA coming down the stretch, maybe WGAS for some of you, or maybe all of you, who knows, baseball around the corner. And yes, Mr. Hip, tell us why you were so muted with your introduction.
Because it's Mike Francis's birthday, and I just can't hold back my excitement. The Hip is on the road, so...
Years the young.
The Hip is on the road today. So in a hotel room, actually, this is how dedicated we are to continuing the show when, other duties of life call. So, out of respect of my neighbor who may be interested in listening to the show all night long, we'd rather not risk a knock on the hotel room door to say, cut it out, fellas, that naughty talk in there. So you may be a little bit subdued on the whispery voices. Oh, it'll just give me a chance to, be a little more caressing with the discussion of the sports of the March Madness. Yes, speaking of Mike Francesa and his birthday, you know what his birthday gift was? His entire Final Four being eliminated already. Yes.
Oh, so joy for us all that we can laugh at the number one, the sports pope himself, losing
so Mike Forbes. All four Final Four teams are gone. So, yes, we are a New York sports podcast. Please rate us on iTunes. I love getting the feedback on Twitter that we're getting ratings, positive ones, I might add, for nice. And so, yes, back to Mike Francesa's important Final Four bracket. He had Notre Dame. He had Villanova. He had... Louisville, and he had Wichita State as his four Final Four teams. Goodbye.
Look, gone.
Let's goodbye. So, look, the first round was nothing too exciting. There were no real major upsets in that first round, and then things really started to change Saturday and Sunday. Villanova, goodbye, and Louisville, goodbye, and then last night, Duke. Duke, who began the year as the overall number one seed in the country, coming up short against South Carolina. That has to be the biggest upset of the tournament so far. Look, I think most people have not watched South Carolina. And so maybe they're legit. We're about to find out that region is completely wide open. And up there for the grabs with Villanova and Duke, gone. So, you could have a Wisconsin make it, Florida, or the other team in the Sweet 16 in that region is Baylor.
Baylor's North Carolina, yep.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll be flocking to Madison Square Garden to see Baylor, South Carolina, or Wisconsin and Florida, and then eventually the Elite Eight game, the regional final. I'm sure they'll just be flocking to the Garden for those teams.
What a disappointment for the Garden. They could have had a Nova Duke regional final and they don't get either team in it. So much, but you know what? That's why they call this March Madness. And you also had
sucks for other James Dolan.
Yeah. I don't think we're too sympathetic there. So nope. There were a few other teams, high seeded teams that had big scares. Kentucky barely hung on against Wichita State.
Great game. It's been Wichita State's out because I know we make fun of Mike for him choosing Wichita State, but it's a shame that Wichita State we saw them play that epic game a couple of years ago, and Wichita State was like they were undefeated, right, that year. And then that was also the same year that Kentucky would go on to beat Michigan and then lose to UConn in the final. But yeah, it's a shame that Wichita State had to play Kentucky in that second round. And you even heard that those sentiments echoed by John Calipari as well. So, but that was one of the better games of the second round, I thought. I don't know if you saw any of that one. That was a very good game. Really intense. Two block shots to end the game too. Two block shots there. They couldn't even get a shot off at the end, Wichita State.
It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, two straight blocks.
Neither team had a large lead. It was close the whole time.
Back and forth. Like multiple lead changes, yeah, like double digit lead changes. Yeah, really, really good.
Yeah,
game.
And then, you know, the UNC Arkansas game was really interesting because UNC got off to a huge lead and Arkansas just couldn't hit a shot, couldn't do anything. It was like they were just completely lost. So I turned off and went to watch started watching the Duke game. And then I noticed that Arkansas was picked up a lead in the second half on North Carolina, and eventually they pulled away. But it definitely was a big scare for them. And there's just something about them that always seems off. They just don't seem to play with a lot of chemistry, I feel like.
North Carolina.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I've never been a Roy Williams guy. I mean, even when he was at Kansas, I was never a fan of his. I mean, look, they're always very talented. They have one of the best programs in the country. But yes. No, I'm with you. You can definitely tell, like, when they're playing, there's no that cohesion. That's because I mean, so many teams. I mean, they're built upon the coach's system. He instills a system. They practice in that system. They play in that system all year, and then they try and execute it. And a lot of some teams they execute it very well. Other teams not so much. But yeah, North Carolina, it's like, all right, the best players go out and be the best players, and we'll hopefully win that way. So, and you see a few teams like that. I would say UCLA kind of to an extent as well, which UCLA will take on Kentucky. As Kentucky, like another program, lots so many ones and dones. That I wouldn't say this is a vintage Kentucky team. I would say that UCLA is going to win that game. And I think you will eventually see, I think Butler could put a scare into North Carolina, but I think North Carolina is going to emerge in that one. And I think we'll end up seeing a UCLA-North Carolina matchup in that bracket, but that is UCLA Kentucky. That's
a great region.
It gets in the Sweet 16 game. Yeah, vintage UCLA and really good Kentucky team. Doesn't get any better than that in the Sweet 16.
We saw that was, and it's no surprise it's at this point that South region. We knew that emerges from that is going to have to admit won some very tough matchups. Several.
Oh yeah, sure.
Matchups because of how loaded it was and still is with the top four seeds still alive.
Yeah, well, I had UCLA in that region coming out. I did lose Nova. I will, for full disclosure, I did choose Nova as well. I thought they would repeat. I had them going all the way in my one of my brackets at least. So I was wrong there. I thought Wisconsin would be a very tough matchup for Villanova. Wisconsin was much better than an 8 seed. I didn't follow the Big Ten. I'm sure you follow a lot more closely than me. But I thought Wisconsin was the best team in that region all year. And I remember just reading or seeing multiple articles about the Big Ten and how they, were just such a mediocre conference and how the ACC was so wonderful. Well, one ACC team remains where you have three Big Ten teams. So go figure, including the Michigan Wolverines.
And I think Purdue, people weren't on them as much going into this because they lost to Michigan in the Big Ten tournament. But I don't know if you've watched Caleb Swanigan play. He is, he might be one of the top, he was a top three player in the country, I think. He's that good. He's just a huge force underneath, and he could shoot the three. And he is just dominating games right now. And, they could wreak some havoc for Kansas. Right? Isn't that who they would be matched up with coming up, right?
Is Purdue, that right? Purdue is going to play. What bracket is Purdue in?
Purdue is a 4 seed.
Yeah. Right. Kansas, right. Yeah. So they're good. I think that should be a very even game. I don't know much about Purdue. It seems like Purdue is like one of those programs that, year after year, they're usually pretty good, but they haven't been really good for a while. I remember when Glenn Robinson was tearing up the Big Ten at Purdue. I mean, that's really the last time I remember, of the descript Purdue team. But, I think Kansas is good. I don't think Kansas is great, but I think they're good, and I think that should be a good game.
Michigan State gave Kansas a good game. Michigan State did not have their best of seasons coming in as a 9 seed.
No.
And they really tried to hang with Kansas for the first, I'd say 20, to 25 minutes. But every time Michigan State just crept close, Kansas went on another run. And it just happened time and time again. And eventually, winning by 20, the game was a lot closer than the score was. But it was just a matter of Kansas being that much more talented. And, you know, I the line is now 5. Kansas is favored by 5 over Purdue. The line was a little lower and it moved. I would be inclined to take Purdue in that. As good as Kansas is, I think Purdue's going to match up well with them and make it a close game. So okay,
how about your Michigan Wolverines? I mean, they
they're the story of the tournament.
I mean, especially in that first half against Louisville, they were a little stagnant on offense in the early stages of that game. But I mean, they really just, and that kid, Meritz Wagner?
Wagner. Yep.
I mean, wow. I mean, he is quite a talent. I was so impressed by his game. I mean, he had a phenomenal game. So, I mean, obviously going to be impressed. But I mean, just, his length and, he's good with his back to the basket. He's good facing the basket. You know, he's very quick. I mean, he's got some really good low post moves. I mean, he is a player.
You know, and I mean, he creates a lot of magic. I've never seen him play like that ever. Seriously,
I don't know where this came from. He was absolutely tremendous in that game. I mean, he was.
And you know who scored the second most points? DJ Wilson, who's also emerged in the last month. Their other big man, he was very inconsistent all year, and now he's turning it on with athleticism. He could take it coast to coast. He can shoot. He hit so many clutch three throws down the stretch in the game, both against Oklahoma State and Louisville. He was the one that was fouled and hit. I think he had 4 free throws in the last minute against Louisville to seal it. So. They're a very good free throw shooting team, and they are really. It's hard to be objective, but they might be the story of the tournament right now. When you consider that they almost didn't play in the Big Ten tournament because of their plane scare that we've talked about now, and they haven't lost since. Can they keep it rolling? You know. Can they keep it rolling? You know, they are actually favored by 1.5 for Thursday night against Oregon, which is interesting. Oregon's a 3 seed. I haven't watched too much of Oregon. I know they have a pretty clutch shooter who helped them barely survive against Rhode Island yesterday.
Yeah, Rhode Island actually. So, I mean, they had a lead in that game, and the Oregon came back to to edge them out. I was pulling for Rhode Island. I mean, just to see the mid, not mid major, but still an 11 seed. I mean, make it to the Sweet 16. I was pulling for them, but yeah, Oregon just pulled ahead of them, and Rhode Island just ran out of gas down the stretch in that game. But yeah, that should be an interesting game, Oregon and Michigan, and definitely one. Should be one of the better games of the Sweet 16. But I think Wisconsin, Florida should be a very good, very interesting game as well. Two very good defensive teams, very sound teams, well-coached teams. Wisconsin, again, another program that every year they're very solid. I mean, they have a couple, every now and again they have a really special team, going back a couple years ago with Kaminsky, but they have, they're just solid every single year. And again, well-coached, play very solid, sound defensively, and that should be another interesting game as well. So the three Big Ten
Nigel
teams,
Hayes,
Sweet 16. Who would have guessed?
Yeah. Nigel Hayes, I think, is the calmest college, really good big man that I've ever seen. Like, he will have the biggest play of his life, and then he's expressionless after he does it. He's he's having a moment of zen, and he's just taking it all in, and he has no outward emotional expression of joy. It's pretty incredible to watch, and I've heard Wisconsin fans actually say that he's too calm.
Well, I guess his moment of zenith leads to a moment of zen for him. So,
So that's something to look out for when, if you watch that game, when he has an N1, in a critical moment, and you'll see he just kind of like, it's like, all right, whatever, now I gotta go shoot the free throw.
And then the West region, boring. Who cares? Like, I mean, Xavier, Arizona. Okay, whatever. Gonzaga, West Virginia should be a good game. I mean, both are good teams. Both, again, very good defensive teams. But, and, you know, look, Gonzaga, I mean, they're demonstrating that they are, you know, granted they beat the 16th seed and they beat Northwestern. So not overly impressed, you know, two overly impressive teams, obviously. But West Virginia is good, and they will definitely have earned it getting to the regional final if they beat West Virginia. And I hope we get a Arizona-Gonzaga, because I think that would be by far the best game. And I hope those two teams win. Usually, let's root for the underdog, Xavier, the 11th seed. But I don't know. I think I'd rather just see the two big teams get there, and let's see a really good game between two really good teams.
I selfishly want Xavier to win because I know they would pose less of a threat to Gonzaga, who is my champion in all of my brackets. So I am still alive.
Well, that would be the more hipster pick to take Gonzaga to win it all, as opposed to, you know, Duke or. And I didn't have it for a second. I didn't think to take Duke. Not that, again, my choice in that bracket worked out, as they also got bounced, but. It wasn't an overly dramatic first weekend. There were some good games. There were some lackluster games.
There were really no buzzer beaters.
No, there wasn't.
I don't think there was a single game that ended on a buzzer beater.
There
was no overtime games.
Yep,
so no overtime, even though you had some upsets,
you had a couple. I mean, there were nothing that was really like just eye opening or you saw a 12 seed win. You saw a 30. Was that it? I mean, I'm trying. 1-12 seed, right? I mean, how many other? I mean, a couple 11 seeds.
Wasn't there a high Florida, Middle Tennessee State one?
They were 12.
They were.
They were 12.
Oh, they were 12.
Yeah. They were 12.
That's
the
highest seed.
We're the lowest seed that won. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Okay. I mean, again, it was. A good first weekend, but nothing, again, overly spectacular or dramatic. But you'll have some good matchups in the Sweet 16.
I mean,
and all right, next.
I think you're being a little harsh. I mean, the second round games, you had some big time upsets, and you had some teams that really hung on to close calls. I agree in that there was no buzzer beater. There was. And so if you really wanted the quintessential, like, fadeaway three as time expires when you're down by two, crazy shot that you swish, fine. We didn't have that.
Yeah, where's Tyrus Edney coming down the court to score? Where's Bryce Drew, nailing a three for Valparaiso, right? I mean, where was any of that? We were lacking that. But
There were some good games.
There were some really good games. Again, the Michigan game was a tremendous game. The Wichita State game Kentucky game was a tremendous game. Obviously, South Carolina, knocking or smacking around Duke was a sight to see. And, of course, there were some people that were very upset that game got pushed to South Carolina when it was supposed to be originally in North Carolina. And like, South Carolina had such a home court advantage. Well, Duke wouldn't have had one in North Carolina. What am I, crying for Duke? And it's a couple hours away. I mean, it's not like they went across the country to play like UCLA in California. Shut up, Duke. My God.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Absurd. You want to say the reason was stupid because of the bathroom law and that's why they moved it and it was stupid that they did that? Fine, whatever. I don't care what your opinion of that or your politics are, but shut up. You're such a great traveling school. You have fans everywhere, Duke. Then where were you yesterday? I mean, get out of here.
Well, maybe they were there.
They make excuses. Or Pitino. How about Pitino making excuses instead of giving credit to Michigan? They played okay, but we didn't do this and we didn't do that. Pipe down. You lost, Pitino. I know, you're the great Rick Pitino. Just hush, okay? You lost, and just put your tail between your legs and goodbye.
Well, he runs the city of Louisville. He's more important than the mayor, so.
Of course. Well, we saw him, of course, in Louisville. After we got to watch a dramatic Islander playoff overtime victory against the Capitals a couple of years ago.
It was while we were watching the game.
Yes, Rick was over
there. He just walks into the bar restaurant and like down on the main strip. I don't remember the name of the street, but anybody who's familiar with Louisville would know. The city center, I think, is the area. And yeah, he just walked in and looked like he was having lunch with, a player.
Well, everybody just got silent, and everybody just kind of bowed their heads, out of respect.
Started gushing.
don't say anything. Just let him sit down, and then we can all resume. Don't speak unless spoken to.
No.
So, yeah. Like I said, he is the mayor of Louisville.
You're gone. Goodbye. So. Goodbye, Rick.
All right, but, yep, he's
next,
gone.
See you next year.
As is Krzyzewski. He's gone. As is Grayson Allen, that little SOB. So, but there is Sweet 16 will resume this coming Thursday when Michigan tips off at what time? 7:10?
Yep. In my bigger pool where there's like 60 bracket entries, I have Gonzaga over UCLA chip and Michigan as a Final Four team as well.
Really? Ooh.
So we got some possibilities.
Rolling the dice with Michigan there. You know what? Maybe they're on those magic carpet rides, Michigan. Who knows? I mean, it could be.
You know what, though? I knew that I had to deviate from Kansas because I know a lot of people are going to pick that. And so I knew that if I'm going to have a chance to win, if I'm going Gonzaga and UCLA, and so many people are picking Kansas, I couldn't have them come through. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, you had a roll of the dice. I think Louisville would have been an okay choice Louisville is a good
choice. Sure.
But, I definitely would have had Michigan winning their first round. Well, they eked it out by a point. I mean, not too much defense played in that game. But, they were better defensively. Not that Louisville is a great offensive team, but still better defensively in this game on Sunday, Michigan. And, again, I mean, when they start hitting their shots, Michigan, they hit their shots. So
against Oklahoma State, it was scary because they were 11 for 14 at one point on three-pointers,
right?
In the second half alone at one point. and they weren't even moving the ball. They were just passing it around the arc, and one guy would just chuck it up. And yes, they kept going in. But I'm watching this saying, this is not sustainable.
This can't last. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. No. And teams that, there are teams that are just a lot more balanced offensively. And I think ultimately those, and it's an obvious statement, you can say fine.
But
teams that, shoot the lights out at times that just, you're streaky and they go hot and cold and they rely just on being able to hit the three, which is still not a high percentage shot. Sustainable. Now you can go on a run, of course, but one of the things I was gonna, like a theme I want to throw out there, and I know I want to get something in, but I was gonna say balance wins championships. It's not defense that wins championships. It's not always the team that shoots the three wins a championship. It's balance. It's being able to play offense, being a good offensive team, but also being a good defensive team. But if you're slanted one way or the other, your chances for success just go way down dramatically. At least in my opinion. And we have three teams that are in the top 10 in defensive efficiency that are out. That's Wichita State, Virginia, who we have yet to, poke a little fun at. Our lead creative consultant, the alum of Virginia. So they are outscored, 20 points in their game? And Cincinnati, all in the top 10 in defensive efficiency. They're gone. Whereas Gonzaga, West Virginia, South Carolina, Florida are also in the top 10 of defensive efficiency. But they will be advancing because they actually can play some offense too. So I'm sorry, but
West Virginia does a full court press the entire game. I don't so it'll be interesting to see how that fares against a pretty athletic Gonzaga team. I was just gonna get one other thing in about Michigan is, but they made the adjustment against Louisville in that scorers were their two big men with Wagner and DJ Wilson, Michigan. So they didn't rely on the three-pointer as much to propel them to victory. So even though they were heavily relying on it against Oklahoma State, Coach Beilein drew up a different game plan, and it worked. So we'll revisit the Final Four.
Beilein really is a tremendous coach. I mean, he's one of the more, I think, an underrated coach in college basketball. Tremendous coach, Beilein. I mean, he's really, you want to say he's not in the Calipari or Patino or Krzyzewski tier, but I mean, he is a tremendous head coach, Beilein. And hey,
as Mr. Pitsnoggle, the alum of West Virginia, can attest to, back when Coach Beilein was the Mountaineers head coach.
Ah, I see. Actually, I did not know that, huh? He was before Michigan. He was West Virginia. All right. You're right. Moritz Wagner.
So we'll revisit.
Yes.
Yep. It came out of nowhere. That was,
Yeah, 6 for 17
okay,
for three.
Okay, so what is our – So is there a Tim Tebow update this week? I can't believe it took so long to get to it. Oh, wait, no, there is none. No Tim Tebow update.
I saw a headline that said Tim Tebow magic. So it was in the same headline.
I didn't want you to have no update.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but now that you brought it up, I just wanted to relay that. There was a headline in the – I think it was in the Post. It was an article like a Tim Tebow and magic in the same headline.
And click. You're clicking away, I'm sure.
Off. Goodbye. Next.
So today, you know, one of the biggest question marks now for the Mets is Matt Harvey. This is a guy coming off of this thoracic outlet syndrome, which has to do with blood flow and the nerves and, you know, stuff that I don't really fully understand, but understand that it's very serious and not too many athletes have fully ever recovered from it. He had to have a rib removed to help blood flow. So, you know, one of the big issues for him is that he's been getting rocked in spring training. And I know we're easy to, you know, say, well, who cares about spring training? But when you're a guy coming off of a serious procedure or operation like that, of course you're going to pay attention to it. And it's Matt Harvey, who's, you know, all about intensity. And his velocity had been very below his normal levels so far in spring training. Today he did get it up to 96 miles an hour. I understand that it sat more at 93, but that is a big positive sign. He did wear down in the fifth inning. That's pretty early. Didn't make it through the fifth inning. Got hit a little bit, but you know, and it's March 20th now. We're not too far away from opening day, and you know, they're going to obviously, you know, baby him along. I don't see him, you know, throwing 80 or 90 pitches in his first start, unless he just is able to suddenly ramp it up. But they don't want to push him. And he's a, you know, a huge piece. Of course, you have the other guys with Syndergaard and DeGrom, but you know, he's a really important piece. And you know, the player who was a question mark, David Wright, he really isn't a question mark because it's just gone completely the other way. I just think there's no question mark because he's just not going to be playing.
No, and the Mets will not be relying on David Wright. If he comes back, if he says, "Hey, I'm back, I'm fine," they'll say, "Okay, maybe we'll find a spot for you in some capacity." But I mean, David Wright.
And so there's nothing they can really do with him. It's just he's like, is, you know, somebody made a good point the other night and said, is David Wright Mattingly of the Mets?
It's not a bad analogy. I mean, Mattingly was on his way. I mean, he was a star. He was on his way to being, you know, to being a Hall of Fame first baseman. And then his back, I mean, it just completely derailed him. I mean, he started having back issues and he was just never the same player. Never. I mean, he fought through it. He played. And that's it.
When did he retire? Like 33,
95
right?
seasons after the 95 season. So he would have
been.
How
old was he? I mean, he was like,
yeah, he would have been like something like that. Yeah. I mean,
David Wright,
he played through it.
David Wright's tried to play through it the last couple of years, but he hasn't been able to do anything. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's that I was like, yeah, it's so obvious. That seems, you know, unfortunately, if it's going to continue this way, but just such an early, rapid decline.
Now the handwriting's on the wall for David Wright. Absolutely. And I wouldn't expect, I think Met fans are pretty much kind of going into the season, not expecting to get any kind of significant contribution from David Wright. And I think at this point, the third base job is Jose Reyes, and that's it. And then first base, you know, we'll see the shuffling, and you know, will this guy be will do to be healthy? And Jay Bruce, is he going to play there in the outfield? Conforto, is he going to make an impact this year? Is he going to be able to rediscover the stroke, or is he going to strike out the 7 out of every 10 times or 9 out of every 10 times against the lefty? And you know, look, the Mets are predicated, we know, on their pitching. They're going to go as far as their pitching. But they have a good lineup. I mean, they have a solid lineup. But like you said, they're relying on that starting rotation, which could be one of the best, if not the best, in baseball if everybody's healthy and pitching effectively. And that's a question with Matt Harvey. And Matt Harvey, I like you said, they're going to baby him along. And I think at this point, you know, I wouldn't – you know, you don't really look at the spring, at the outings and his numbers and, oh, how many runs, how many hits. You just want to see that he is getting back to where he was. That is, like you said, there was an uptick in his velocity.
The velocity.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not shocked that, you know, it's hasn't come back for him right away. I don't know much about this injury, but I'm sure that velocity is going to be a thing that's, whenever you have any arm injury, velocity is going to be affected. And everybody puts so much stock into it. He just has to, you know, he's always had great command of his pitches. You know, when he was at his best, he didn't walk anybody. I mean, he had great command of his pitches. You know, he had 3+ pitches. And if he can, you know, if he has to overcome or compensate for a, you know, lower velocity on his fastball early on, I'm sure, you know, unless there's some lingering thing with him, eventually it'll come back. And, you know, you just hope that he can regain what he, and, you know, become what he was a couple of years ago. And if he can, then you have, you know, 3 top pitchers, and potentially, you know, if Matz is healthy. I mean, we know that he has a lot of talent. And then obviously Wheeler, you know, what's his deal? I mean, I guess it's been a little more encouraging with him too. And then they have the Gazelle, of course, the fantasy darling.
And Seth Lugo. It's an embarrassment of riches for the Mets in pitching.
The Gazelle, though, right? The fantasy darling, the super, super, super sleeper.
Yeah. Those of you preparing for your fantasy drafts, Robert Gazelman is a good last starting pitcher to put on your roster if you're like in a standard 12-team league.
All right, to wait till the very end.
He's probably going to be starting.
He may be starting for Harvey if Harvey doesn't, if they decide to maybe. Isn't there like a 10-game DL now to start the season? If you have a guy that's hurt, you don't have to put him on the 15-day. You can put him like on a 10-day DL or some nonsense. I don't know, something like that.
You know, we forgot to cover the fact that Brandon Marshall signed with the Giants on the last show. Oh, I don't think we brought it up.
Brandon Marshall's a Giant. He's not a Jet anymore. He
asked for his release from the Jets.
The other locker room. Oh, I wonder how many times you've heard that one. All he had to do was just go to the other locker room. He didn't have to change addresses. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, same for Gino. Little Gino is a Giant. Will he survive?
Look at how many Jets they've signed. You know, last year was Harrison. You know, this year now Marshall and Gino. Yeah, I mean, the Giants, Reese is just like, just go across the hall to, you know, and we'll bring a couple of Jet free agents over here.
Well, you know, Gino's been brought in as competition with Josh Johnson as the backup to Eli. So we'll survives. We'll see if he survives the roster training camp. And the big splash, though, was JPP and his contract. 4 years, $62
million. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing, you know, that they signed him to a long-term deal. It actually gives him a little more flexibility with the cap instead of having JPP just on his franchise, you know, the one-year franchise tag and the $16 million, whatever he was going to make this year if they couldn't sign him to a long-term deal. So it's a good thing. Look, and Marshall's a good player. I think Marshall will be a very solid addition. He's a, you know, he's good in the locker room. I mean, he's a veteran, obviously. He's a big target. We know Manning likes the big targets going back to his days of Plaxico and throwing to him. And he can still play Marshall. He's a competitive guy. He wants to win. So I think he's a good addition. JPP, like you said, it was big that they signed to a
Marshall.
It's a great story, too, JPP, considering that it was not that long ago that he almost blew off his hand. I mean, it's like, almost forget that already. I mean, this is a guy that is still playing with that special glove and 8.5 fingers or however many fingers he has. I mean, he is. It's really a tremendous story. It's a testament to JPP. It really is. So, kudos
when that was happening. When JPP was when that
blowing up
when
his
that
hand.
News of that injury. Yeah, when that first surfaced, like, I remember a picture. It was almost like paparazzi style of him, like, getting into a car. Like, somebody sees JPP because it was so mysterious at first, like, what actually happened. And wasn't it because Adam Schefter got, like, medical records and there was a lawsuit over it and this whole big thing that they were allegedly illegally obtained? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that was a giant, no idea what was going on. He didn't. Like the Giant, like he wouldn't tell the Giants. They couldn't see it. They didn't see him. They didn't know. They really had no idea. And now
4 years, $62 million.
Yeah. So, but here's the one thing though. They have not really addressed the offensive line, and that's what. Yes, they signed DJ Fluker, the former first round pick of San Diego. I don't know where they envision on playing him. He's played tackle and guard. He's not going to play left tackle. He can't play left tackle. So it'd either be right guard or right tackle. They brought back John Jerry as well. So I guess that's to provide competition. So, I mean, is what they said when they re-signed him. But the question is, what's happening at left tackle? If Fluker's going to play right tackle, or if he's going to play guard and you're going to have somebody else play right tackle, Or are they going to move Flowers to right tackle? But then who's going to play left tackle? Are they actually considering playing Flowers at left tackle? I just can't see them doing that next year. He had a miserable year last year at left tackle. I don't think he can play there. And I think it would be a big mistake for them to keep him there. I really do. And right now, I think that may be the plan. Maybe not by design. Maybe they had their hopes set on one of these other veteran guys like Whitworth or Okung, and they got just too much money. They didn't have enough money to bring him in, and they were like, damn, there's nobody else really out there. Do we really want to draft another guy to stick at left tackle and play a rookie at left tackle? No. So what are other options? They don't have any. Right now, there's nothing. Unless a guy gets cut, unless they're just going to wait for a guy to get cut either in June or at the camp or something. But right now it's Eric Flowers, and that's scary because he was horrible. He was awful last year, legitimately terrible.
We've covered him at length.
Yes, we have. But all right, next. Jets, Josh McCown. Is that who we can look forward to as Jets fans, Josh McCown? Here comes Josh on his horseback to save the day.
God.
Oh, boy. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's true.
Chase
Bring
McDaniel.
Back Gino.
Chase
McDaniel. The Jets fans are probably saying, oh, we should have brought back Gino. Oh, Gino.
Yeah.
Because right now there is nothing out there. Nothing. Unless they just say,
Kaepernick.
All right, we'll just... Kaepernick, yeah. I mean, Kaepernick, I think, can still play a little bit at least. I mean, you know, McCown, you know, he's the coach out there. I mean, yes, he can play a little bit. I mean, he's 100 years old, McCown. I mean, what is it just to have him be just to have somebody literally man the position? We have nobody else here. We'll just give him a couple of bucks to play and literally figuratively just piss our season down the toilet. I mean, if that's what they want to do, just say to the fans, hey, expect nothing next year. We're going to be as awful as advertised. I mean, okay, great. And watch what that stadium will look like in November when you're 1-9. I mean, don't expect people to be showing up. Man, it is pretty dire right now.
It's going to be a sad year. Yep, it is.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Speaking of sad years, the New York Knicks. Yes, sad year. Sad year.
What have they done lately?
Who knows and who gives a damn?
I don't know. Nobody.
And I wish people would send a message by. And I hate saying this. Maybe stay away. Maybe stay away. Send a clear message that we've had enough.
Are they still filling up the building?
Yeah, people still come because it's a status thing. It's an event. It's it's Midtown Manhattan. I want to be seen at the Garden. We've talked about this. I mean, that's what it's still an outing. It's still a thing to take clients to and to, have a little social gathering to schmooze, your clients and go.
The only way I know
let's say courtside.
Now this is how I know they have a home game. I know they have a home game because when I come out of the office, I work right next to MSG. Cannot be closer to Madison Square Garden, pretty much.
Right.
And I walk out and I look to my left and I look at the colors on the building.
Yep.
If they're playing at home tonight, because the colors are orange and blue. That's how I know.
Oh, yes. Everybody's very excited preparing for the – that they gave up 241 points to the Nets in the two games that they lost to the Nets. 241 points. To the Nets. If you didn't think that they could set the bar lower, they find a way every game to lower the bar just a little bit more. Where's James Cameron when you need him? He's Cameron. James – it's a South Park reference. But, oh, my God. They are just – and, they have how many games left? I don't even – 10, 12 games, whatever it is. They're not making the playoffs. We know that. They're just they're a complete and utter embarrassment. Top to bottom, everybody, owner,
is Rose
president,
still playing?
GM. Yeah, he's, I guess, playing in the sense, in the technical term. Yes, he's playing.
So he managed to stay pretty healthy this year.
I guess so. Yeah,
we talked about how important he was. We talked about how important he was to this team. And despite his managing to stay healthy, I don't know if he's had a crappy year or if it's just
everything. Everything's just gone wrong. I mean, their bench has been bad. Obviously, we know they play no defense. Porzingis has taken a big step back this year. I mean, you know, just obviously Noah he's going to go down as one of the worst free agent signings in NBA history. I mean, he is, you know, the corpse of Joakim Noah for 3 more years for the Knicks. So, you talk about the Jets. I mean, the Knicks are, I don't know which team is in a sadder state right now. It's pretty awful.
And well, at least, you know, the Knicks have more talent on their roster, I would say.
Yeah, talent, Jets right. At this point. I mean, Anthony right now, you know, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. I mean, Porzingis is basically questioning whether or not he should be here long term. I mean, we know Rose will be gone next year. You know, they'll have a decent draft pick, and it's supposed to be a very good draft, so maybe they'll get another halfway decent player. But, I mean, right now, I have no idea what Phil's going to do. Maybe he'll bolt. Maybe he'll be like, I've had enough of this. You know, since Phil hasn't talked to anybody, Phil's always, you know, he's been a witness protection since the beginning of the season. You know,
he can't be having fun.
I mean, he gives a damn. He's making $12 million a year to do nothing. He doesn't think he gives a damn. Whatever. I'm Phil Jackson. I'm 11 rings. Kiss my rings. Yeah, you're
pretty much
right now. If you ask New York Knicks fans, we would say you can take your rings and shove them, and that you are the biggest fraud in sports history. How's that, Phil? You like that title? Fraud. Your 11 rings mean nothing because you acquired them on the backs of superstars like Jordan and Kobe and Shaq. So, yeah, well done. Well done. I could have done that. Yeah, maybe I
could.
Tony Kukoc, yeah. Scotty Pippen takes himself out of the game because he writes up a play for Kukoc. Speaking of Steve Kerr, and that's a great segue because Steve Kerr saw this disaster. I'm sure that he saw this disaster coming from a mile away. The best decision, the best move, the best thing that Steve Kerr ever did. Forget about leading his team to a championship a couple of years ago and leading them back again last year. And we're going to get to what happened on last Saturday and then this past Saturday in just a moment. I have a few words because we didn't do it last time. And if you have anything to add, you know, or chime in, please do. Because I mean, it's – but anyway, so
I think you got this one. Take it away.
I was just going to say, but Steve Kerr, the best move he has made in his entire coaching career was deciding to avoid the Knicks, to spurn his old coach Phil, and go to a team that was as tailor-made to win as a coach ever walked into, probably ever. I mean, when he looked at that Golden State team, and he looked at the Knicks team. Do you think for a second he actually thought that he had a decision to make? Do you think that he for a second said to himself that there was any vacillation in there? Oh, well, I don't know. Knicks, Golden State, Knicks, the train wreck, the absolute disaster, embarrassment that are the Knicks, or a team that is primed to win a championship tomorrow? What do I do? I mean, forget about, you know, his achievement of winning a championship or, you know, now, of course, if you ask him, I mean, to Steve Kerr, he's God's gift to basketball. I mean, he thinks he's the greatest thing to ever, you know, grace a basketball court. I mean, I guess after LeBron James, and we'll get to him, too. But well done, Steve Kerr. Kudos to you for deciding to spurn your old coach and go to Golden State. So, but what we have seen the last couple of weeks in the NBA, I got to tell you, and we didn't talk about this last week. You know, it was talked about in a lot of places. So, you know, we decided just to kind of hold back on it. But now it's happened twice in a row, 2 weeks in a row, where the NBA has their showcase marquee game of the week on ABC on Saturday night. Now, Saturday night's not a great TV night anyway. The ratings were not going to be through the roof just because it's Saturday night. People are out. Fine. But the fact that we have seen now 2 weeks in a row, two of the two last champions in the NBA, in the Cavaliers and the Warriors, that boast some of the biggest stars, the biggest stars in the game. The fact that we saw those two teams blatantly and deliberately sit their best players in those two games, the last 2 weeks, is And I know we've seen this. I know what we've seen it from Popovich. He started it with his teams. And I know we've seen it with, you know, I'm sure there's other examples with other teams. We've seen it from the Cavaliers this year and the Warriors this year. But you talk about just an example of a team just displaying complete and utter contempt, just a blind arrogance and just utter contempt for the game, for the integrity of the game, for the fans. You know, on the league, whatever. I'm not worried about the NBA and their TV partners. Yeah, it sucks for ABC. I'm sure ABC was, you know, absolutely beside themselves. And their partners, their business partners, Avatar. I'm sure they were all absolutely just fuming, which I don't blame them. I get it. Because I'm sure anybody that turned on that game, not knowing that they were not going to be playing, probably said, why the hell am I watching this dreck? Off. Goodbye. Off. So, but for this display of, again, just utter contempt for the integrity of the game and the fans is something that is just complete and utter disgrace. And it's an embarrassment for the game. And it is just another example of how these entitled, spoiled, prima donna athletes and coaches could care less about anything other than just, you know, their own, you know, the, you know, their own sustainability, you know, their own images, whatever, their, you know, their money. It's just an absolute embarrassment. And I cannot believe that you've seen this now 2 weeks in a row. I'm astounded. And it is such a blight for the league. And apparently the league called the Cavaliers. They called the general manager, Griffin, I think is his name, like 7 minutes after they announced that LeBron, Love, and Kyrie Irving were not going to be playing in this game. Now, you heard, you know, Tyronn Lue say, well, you know, Kevin Love just came back and our schedule and, you know, Kyrie Irving's fighting a knee injury and blah, blah, blah. Of course, Kyrie Irving only scored 46 points the very next night against the Lakers. So I'm sure his knee was really bothering him that game. Wasn't it, Tyronn Lue? But now, nobody for a second here believes that this was all the decision of that Steve Kerr walked into that locker room and said, Curry, Iguodala, Green, Thompson, you're all going to sit. And they were like, okay. And or that Tyronn Lue went into that locker room and said, LeBron, you're going to sit. Okay. Nobody buys that for a second. And again, it's just an example of how these athletes are such complete prima donnas that they could care less about the fans, about the reason that they are able to have all this fame and fortune and just the fact that they, I mean, even like some of the comments after the game from LeBron, you know, he says, oh, well, it sucks at times because certain games you only play in certain cities once or, you know, on their home floor and I want to play in every game, which we know is garbage because we've seen how sit how many times this year for rest. Or when he says, when asked about playing, you know, in the ABC marquee game of the week, well, I've been a part of 6 straight finals and every single season and finals have been bigger and bigger and bigger and better and better and more people have tuned in. Oh, really? Yeah. Thanks to LeBron. It's all because of you, right? It's all because of you. There was no NBA before you, right, LeBron? There wasn't anybody by the name of, you know, Jordan or Magic or Larry or Oscar or Jerry. There was nobody by those names, right, that built the league. It was all you, right, LeBron? And what else is just absolutely crazy here is that the Cavaliers knew that it would prompt this kind of backlash. And that's why this rest, I mean, this was just as transparent and blatant as sending a message. Whatever the message, I don't even know what the message was. I mean, this had nothing to do with resting. 2 weeks in a row, the ABC game, and you're sitting your players, you're obviously sending a message. But you know what? We don't give a damn about whatever your gripes are with the league, scheduling or whatever. Yeah, should the league try and reduce games, number one? Yes, because the regular season's a joke. It's a complete and utter joke. So yes, should they reduce the schedule? Yes. Should they schedule less back-to-backs? Yes. But it also starts with reducing the schedule, which we know they won't do. So that's out the window.
The league has something to figure out here because the players are getting away with it. So it's going to deteriorate. Yes, the passionate fan base is going to deteriorate. The league is not getting
and stay away and say, yes, you know what? Us drop dead, LeBron. You drop dead. How about when we start turning the TV off and we start not showing up for games and then Now what? Now all of a sudden you have a big problem, right? Now we know that
the league
like that on a big scale is just not feasible. But
the league is not.
It will happen.
But the league is not
gradually.
They're not gaining fans. They're not gaining fans overall with this. You would have to think that, you know, they're going to struggle with continuing to build popularity because of this kind of stuff. I mean, why would somebody be excited to get into a league when the stars can decide when they want to play and have that kind of control? It's just not set up well.
I mean, this is what you're paid to do. You know, this is your job. Injuries are completely different. If you're injured, okay, nobody questions it. You're injured, fine. And I know that, you know, Leonard was injured for the Spurs in that game. And I guess Aldridge was also injured. All right, fine. If you're legitimately injured, okay, Love was coming off of his injury. You wanted to say, we're going to sit him. We're going to play Irving and LeBron. We'll just sit Love. Okay, fine. Or even if Irving, okay, he plays 25 minutes, his ankle, he'll play 25 minutes. LeBron plays it. That's fine. All right? Yes, the coach has to think about the team and try and win. We understand that. But this is just an absolute embarrassment, and the league really does have an issue here. But the biggest problem I have, like I said, the coaches, they don't run the show. We know that. That wasn't Steve Kerr doing that. That wasn't Tyronn Lue. That was the players. Oh, it's our rest game. We want to send the message. We're going to sit this game. Shame on all of you. Sorry. Because, I mean, I actually read a few stories about people that went to San Antonio. I'm sure they went to L.A. too, but went to San Antonio to see those two teams with their players, not with their D-League team playing. Not with J.R. Smith hoisting up 43s yesterday. It was Saturday. I mean, but you know, can you imagine if you came from out of town to see that game and you pay whatever through the roof?
Yep.
I mean, you'd be absolutely furious.
Losing fans. They're losing fans.
And
see if it actually has an impact.
It's the arrogance too. That you know, like James, you think, you know, it's why it's so difficult to root for him. I can never root for LeBron James. I just can't. I mean, Michael Jordan was an SOB, you know, on the court and in practice. And it was only because he demanded, you know, the most out of his teammates. And he was, you know, not an easy teammate sometimes. But, you know, he never, ever, I mean, so any athlete in any past generation, you never saw this type of behavior. It's just like this, you know, I'm the greatest thing in the world. I can do whatever I want. You know, I have all this fame and money and notoriety, and I'm a big celebrity superstar. So I can do whatever the hell I want and no consequences at all. And that's the attitude
that
lots of athletes have.
He can get away with it.
And it sucks.
Sadly,
well, you know what? Maybe it's time that we stop letting him get away with it.
It does suck.
Like I said, maybe it's time that people start turning off the TV or staying away and saying, fine, you want to tell us to drop dead? Right back at you.
And I've had very little desire. I've had very little desire to watch any NBA games.
Season's a joke. It is.
We were trying to get into the Knicks, and clearly that whole thing blew up. And so since then, there's been, you know, there's plenty of other interesting storylines to follow outside of the NBA. And so we'll see how it evolves or devolves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the solution is, but the NBA will. I'm sure we'll try and figure out something.
So talking about evolving or devolving, your New York Islanders, since we had our last show, have had two games and one total point between them. Both home games, by the way. You know, talk about that whole 9-game road trip that they were really dreading that they ended up doing pretty well. But since then, since they had that 9-game road trip, they've gone 1-2-1. So coming out with 3 points in 4 games, and they're, you know, fighting for this playoff spot to earn the right to probably play the Capitals, although there's still a bit of a battle going on right there. I mean, look, they had the last show, there was the back-to-back against Carolina. Since then, they hosted the Winnipeg Jets and lost. Oh, and by the way, you want a hipster moment of nadir for the week? Seems to be the new thing. Last show, I talked about how because the Devils game was postponed from the snowstorm, they moved the Islanders to a different MSG channel, right?
Yep.
And how that frustrated the guide to show it. Well, Comcast one-upped me for the Winnipeg game because that same day, the Islanders, the Devils makeup game was moved to that to the same day as Winnipeg, which was Thursday last week. And on Comcast, you know, there were the Knicks, I think, were on the MSG, and then there was MSG Plus and MSG Plus 2. And one of those two channels, I forgot which one, on the guide said the Islanders. The other said the Devils. Okay. So I go to the one that says the Islanders, and I put it on the Devils game. I'm like, all right, well, maybe they just flip-flopped them again or something. Then I go to the one in the Devil game, and it's the same freaking Devils broadcast on both different MSG channels, and
what
the Islanders was not on any channel. It was
wrong with them. What?
I couldn't even watch the game. And they had the same Devils broadcast on two different MSG channels. Like, what the hell? Like, just like, what the hell?
I mean,
so I couldn't watch the game.
And people in Jersey actually, at least now, watching the Devils. I mean, the Devils stink too.
I tweeted at the Comcast Twitter account and got no response. And I even saw other people tweeting online complaining that they couldn't watch it. Where's the game? Of course, it was only like four, but there were people out there. And I mean, that was just. So, and no, I didn't call them and go through that whole spiel. It was March Madness, so I was able to look the other way and get not too pissed off because it was the opening night for March Madness, so that helped me survive. And anyway, look, the Islanders, you know, they lost to Columbus in overtime on Saturday and have not played since. Their next game is at the Garden, and then on Wednesday.
Right, the Rangers stink at home, so that should be a win for the Islanders.
And then at Pittsburgh on Friday. So a couple of big divisional foes coming up this week, with the Islanders now 1 point out of the eighth spot in the playoffs, and the team that has the eighth spot, the Maple Leafs, they won tonight, and they have they're 1 point ahead with one game in hand. So look, the Islanders have definitely taken a step back in these last few games. And are they going to, like I said before, is it a evolve or devolve? And, you know, lots of now question marks. And Thomas Greiss, I mean, the guy just is playing so much, you feel bad for him almost.
I mean, that you've heard me rail about that. And apparently Halak maybe, well, it looks like he'll be called up because they have no other choice. So it looks like Halak will be on his way up. You know, the savior is coming.
Too little too late. I think it's too little too late, unfortunately. I don't know why they would have waited so long.
Well, it's all about the ego of the general manager.
Yeah, so what is it that they had that good road trip? What they were 5-3-1?
Yeah, I mean, Winnipeg and Columbus game, I mean, they were bad. I mean, and they've used excuses like fatigue, which I don't want. I mean, are you kidding me using that as an excuse? Don't even say anything. Don't say anything if you're going to use that as an excuse. Fatigue, schedule. Nobody wants to hear. Nobody cares. Everybody plays the same schedule. You know, an 82 game schedule. I don't want to hear that. The defensive play has been rotten. Dennis Seidenberg. I mean, he's, you know, I haven't really criticized him openly. You know what? It's time. Dennis Seidenberg has been absolutely brutal. I mean, he's really been like Brian Straight level of suck. I mean, that's how bad Dennis Seidenberg has been. He had an awful turnover against Columbus that led to a goal. I mean, Seidenberg, he's a veteran that was brought in. He was supposed to be a seventh defenseman. Instead, he's been playing pretty much every game. It's time to sit his ass down.
Where's,
I mean, he has been.
Where's Pulak?
That's a good question. Where is Pulak? I don't know. I guess maybe he also insulted Garth or something, and so he's still banished. I don't know. I have no idea. It's a good question. It makes no sense. But you know what? Hamonic's been terrible. I mean, he's really been uneven all year, and he's been awful since he came back from his injury. It looks like he can't even skate anymore, Hamonic. Hickey's been terrible. I mean, his position – I mean, like, Hickey almost forgot how to play the position. That's how bad Hickey has been. He was scratched the last game. Mayfield actually looked okay in the last game, so we'll see. I would think he'll be in the lineup again on Wednesday. We'll see what they do with, you know, this Hickey – you know, is Boychuk going to come back? You know, we're still waiting for him to come back, and – I don't know if he'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully, I mean, Wednesday, hopefully he will be, because they really miss him. He can, I mean, just solidify that defense, just him coming back. And, but I mean, yes, Pulak should be up here. And Seidenberg should be riding the pine for the rest of the year because he has been horrific. That's how bad he has been. The first line has cooled down a lot. Bailey has cooled down a little bit, and he actually was lost on that overtime goal on Saturday afternoon against Columbus, where Doug Waite, his quote was, he went for a skate. You actually just like saw him like skating around, like he had no idea where he was supposed to be, and led to a goal. The game-winning overtime goal by Columbus. The Islanders were terrible in that game, except for like an eight-minute spurt in the third period. In the Winnipeg game, they were just bad from start to finish. I don't know. This team is just, they're an above-average team at absolute best. At best, I mean, a lot of the year they've been bad or below average. And I honestly, if they get into the playoffs miraculously, I can't see them matching up at all against Washington at all. I mean, even if it's Pittsburgh that passes them, fine. Pittsburgh, they're going to match up against Pittsburgh? Please. Like you said, they play them on Friday, and they bust it on Saturday at home. So it's not getting any easier. But luckily, they play the Rangers Wednesday, and the Rangers can't score at home. So maybe they'll win like a 2-1 game or something. Yeah. But Hosang is, he's still playing well. I mean, he didn't play, I would say the Columbus game was maybe his weakest game since he's been up here. He had a turnover in overtime that led to another turnover by Calvin DeHaan. But he's still, very talented player, and it's somebody that we can at least look forward to for the next few years or maybe decade.
So next week we will be talking about our Final Fours, how they're still intact. We'll be talking about baseball preview.
We'll have to get more into the baseballs, yes.
Absolutely. Will the Islanders still be alive after three tough matchups coming up? So lot to discuss with March Madness and baseball on the way. And we really didn't even mention the Yankees today. Got so much going on here, but that's okay. We did wish a happy birthday to Mr. Mike Francesa.
Yes, so, we did. But I think we should we'll get into a little hipster moment of it'll be kind of like a combo thing here. Hipster moment of Zenith, and also paying homage to a couple very influential figures that just passed away. Well, the hipster moment of Zenith, I was actually just going to call out or poke fun at our lead creative consultant, who is a Michigan alum, well, graduate alum. I know that the undergraduates kind of look at the graduate alum with a little bit of disdain, I guess, a little bit, right? You're not a real Michigan alum because you're a graduate, not a real Michigan alum. Anyway, but he during the Michigan game, he was at a poetry reading. So I was on the floor laughing at that one for like a good 7 minutes, I would say.
Poetry like reading. A two-hour poetry reading?
I guess he saw the first half at the poetry reading, and then he wasn't able to watch it or something the second half. And so he was looking at his phone, and I guess the people reading the poems on stage were getting a little upset with him for not paying attention to their poetry in motion. So I had to poke fun at him for that. And paying homage to the amazing, incredible, very, very influential in his craft, that, of course, would be rock and roll. Chuck Berry has left us. You've heard so many different people as he's the father of the king of rock and roll, the father of rock and roll. But, you've heard Chuck Berry associate a lot with being, recognized as the father of rock and roll. And, some notables, of course, Johnny B. Goode, for those that remember the song from Back to the Future, Johnny B. Goode was Chuck Berry's. Of course, remember to quote, Chuck, it's Marvin, your cousin Marvin Berry. You know that new sound you've been looking for? Well, listen to this. And of course, No Particular Place to Go is the name of the song, right? And Maybelline and, so many very well-known hits. So Chuck Berry has left us at the age of 90, I believe. So a very long, fulfilling life for Mr. Berry. So he will be missed. And please check out some of his songs, so much better than the crap that they produce today. So check out some of them. Pretty, very cool and H songs. And also Jimmy Breslin. I wanted to throw his name out there, too. The columnist for the Daily News, a very long-time columnist who was notable for his involvement with the Son of Sam incident in 1977, around the time that the Yankees were in their turmoil, as was documented in that ESPN documentary. What was it called again? Or a docudrama, I guess I should say. Summer of Sam, I think. Oh, no, that was the movie. What am I talking about? That was the movie by Spike Lee. No, the ESPN thing was Bronx is Burning. That's it. Bronx is Burning. So Jimmy Breslin, very influential in that, were very significant in that whole incident. And I guess he knew George Steinbrenner pretty well. And he was also featured on The Critic, one of my all-time favorite shows, a couple of times. And he did his own voice, too, which I didn't realize, actually, until recently. So I thought notables I wanted to get in there. All right, next. Huh? I guess maybe some people are saying W. Gass, but all right.
I can see W. Gass to this.
Unless yes. Unless Mr. Hip has anything to add to any of that, like poetry readings or Jimmy Breslin or Johnny B. Goode.
No, I think you covered it pretty well.
All right. Well, then that will take us to everybody's favorite segment, yours and mine, the Hipster Beer of the Week. And take it away, Mr. Hip.
Yes, we had the pleasure of being in each other's company on St. Patrick's Day to enjoy some basketball games and karaoke, but it all got started with this beer, Equilibrium Brewing MC Squared. So this is available draft only. Equilibrium Brewing does not can or bottle anything yet. They are located in Middletown, New York, which is in Orange County. They're a little west of Newburgh and Beacon area. And this beer was just absolutely phenomenal. It reminded me of the Long Island City, Sand City collaboration, Full Monty. It's a double IPA. It's described as having bright tropical notes of mango, pineapple, and apricot. It tastes like succulent mango juice loaded with chewy hop resins, 8.0%. Just a very fruity, tropical, bitter, you know, overly bitter double IPA. And man, it was just so super tasty. So if you have any opportunity to drink Equilibrium, if you're out at a, you know, bar or restaurant, just do yourself a favor and get whatever it is that they have.
All right.
So, all right.
And it was a hell of a hipster beer, I will say.
Yes, it was.
I love those mango, succulent mango juices. And I will also say that I really enjoyed, before we close out, I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed your very caressing tone of voice throughout the whole episode. I think maybe we should switch from New York sports podcast to maybe a New York-like love relationship podcast. Yes, you have, you're listening to Hip at Nights. I am the Hip. We'll be talking about all kinds of things like love and such. So please stay tuned. Yes.
Is that you imitating me in the caressing voice? Yes. Okay. Or is that you trying to, you know, imitate me, but in your own voice for how you would actually be speaking in the caressing voice?
I think yes. The latter.
Yes. I think a lot of yes. Okay, so let's go out with a bang with some Hip in the Lip music.
All right.
Right now.
All right.